morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Today is Thursday, January the 20th, and here are some of the stories that we're covering for you this morning. A South African study finds that the Omicron variant of COVID-19 is less severe than previous ones, even for the unvaccinated.
We see about a 25% lowering of the risk of death, so about 1.3 times.
The Democratic Republic of Congo is a step closer towards being admitted to the East African Community.
And hopefully one day we would see real integrated continent of Africa with 54 member states, where its citizens are able to move freely without any restrictions.
Nigerian football fans are cheering their team, the Super Eagles, at home and in Cameroon, which is hosting the Africa Football Cup of Nations tournament. We have these stories and more coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Stay tuned. And for our top story, a South African study has found the Omicron variant of COVID-19 is less severe than previous ones, even for the unvaccinated. The country's top scientists said this could be good news for bringing an end to the pandemic, as the highly contagious variant also spreads resistance. Linda Giftash reports from Johannesburg.
South Africans no longer have to race to get home before midnight. A curfew imposed at the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic was finally scrapped ahead of New Year's Eve. Now, Dr. Marianne Davies, a professor of epidemiology at the University of Cape Town, says there's more good news about the latest coronavirus variant, Omicron.
We see about a 25% lowering of the risk of death, so about 1.3 times lower risk of death. And so that makes us think that residual effect, that 25% reduction, could be the true effect due to lower virulence of the Omicron compared to previous variants.
So that reduction is compared to the previous Delta variant, which was more severe than the original virus. The study, which has yet to be peer-reviewed, found Omicron to be similar in severity to the first wave. Davies says a major difference now is that prior infections and vaccinations help reduce hospitalizations and deaths. While Omicron evaded vaccines and reinfected people, Dr. Shabir Madi, a professor of vaccinology at the University of the Witwatersrand, says that's not necessarily a bad thing.
It's going to boost immune responses in people that were previously infected. It's going to boost immune responses in people that have been vaccinated. And it will also result in further immunity in people that haven't been previously infected or vaccinated up until now. The data is quite compelling. That people that have this hybrid immunity, vaccine together with infection, in fact, they probably got a better immune response.
Scientists emphasize getting the virus is no substitute for a vaccine. Death rates remain highest among people who aren't inoculated. Official government figures say over 93,000 lives have been lost. Davies says getting sick has other consequences.
But even a mild variant can cause a lot of chaos for a health service, for a number of reasons. The one is with these very high transmission rates, you get a lot of people infected at any one time, and that includes healthcare workers. Mm-hmm. And so that means that you've got a lot of people who are off work and often their contacts needing to be quarantined, and that can have huge impacts.
Still, the promise of less stringent protocols is welcome to businesses hurting from nearly 2 years of curfews and lockdowns. Alex Zabo is the owner of the Antisocial Club, a bar and restaurant in Johannesburg.
There was a big conversational point on the 28th of December, where do we stay closed or do we reopen? And the reason we reopened was these extra 3 hours. We do believe that there has to be a brighter day coming.
Whether increased immunity amid fewer restrictions will be enough to ward off the worst effects of the coronavirus will be tested by future variants. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
And still in South Africa, South African U.S.-born billionaire Patrick Soon-Shiong and South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa have cut the ribbon at a new vaccine manufacturing plant. It is hoped they will soon start making Africa's first locally produced COVID-19 vaccines there, as well as cancer vaccines and other medicines. Vicky Stark has this report from Cape Town, South Africa.
A crowd cheers as Dr. Soon-Shiong and President Ramaphosa take to the stage at the Nant SA Vaccine Manufacturing Campus at a business park in Cape Town. 69-year-old Dr. Soon-Shiong left South Africa after doing his internship to become a medical doctor. Today, he is number 89 on the Forbes 400 list of wealthiest Americans, with an estimated fortune of $7.5 billion. A transplant surgeon by profession, he became known for inventing the cancer treatment drug Abraxane. He says the COVID-19 vaccine he has developed is second generation and will stop the transmission of the virus. However, he emphasized the vaccines currently available are effective and necessary.
So important for you to be vaccinated, that these vaccines that were there will play a very important role as a, I would say, not as stopgap, but as first generation, because it did absolutely reduce death. And it does continue to do so. So I want to make sure that people understand that you need to be vaccinated.
However, he said today's vaccines aren't the final answer to the pandemic.
Unfortunately, two things happen. The antibodies wane and the viruses mutate, and you get yourself into a spiral, which then opens up the opportunity for the second generation vaccine. So the first generation vaccine was absolutely not a waste of time. However, we needed to, in parallel, I believe, have focused on the second generation vaccine so that we're there to stop the transmission.
President Ramaphosa, who has been campaigning for vaccine manufacturers to give up their patent rights so that all countries can produce COVID-19 vaccines, says discussions with the World Trade Organization on this continue.
Demand that we've been making at the World Trade Organization, initiated by India and South Africa, is that we want the world, or those who have the capacity to manufacture the drug substance, to transfer their technology so that we are able to manufacture ourselves the drug substance. And this is where the real challenge has been. We want to migrate from just doing fill and finish and be able to manufacture the drug substance ourselves. So this will, on the continent, be the first.
The president and Sun Chiong also launched the Coalition to Accelerate Africa's Access to Advanced Healthcare, known as the AAAH Coalition. It aims to accelerate domestic production of pharmaceuticals and vaccines that will reach patients across the African continent. The Africa Regional Director for the World Health Organization, Matshidiso Moeti, congratulated the pair and said it was a proud day for Africa.
This new vaccine manufacturing campus will be an important space contributing to the ecosystem for manufacturing capacity. It will contribute positively to Africa's response to COVID-19, as well as cancer, HIV, childhood preventable diseases, neglected tropical diseases, and other conditions. The coalition could not have come at a better time. We foresee that it will offer new opportunities to expand manufacturing capacities and technology transfer in South Africa and the region.
Sun Chiong says it will cost about $196 million to complete the plant. He says once it is fully operational, his company hopes to produce about 1 billion COVID-19 vaccines by 2025. Vicky Stark for VOA News, Cape Town, South Africa.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. Kenyan police say they are sending investigators to the Yala River in western Kenya, where locals have been finding bodies tied up in sacks. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
The Yala River in western Kenya has become the center of attention for human rights workers and families of missing persons. Local residents say five bodies have been found in the river this month alone, including one discovered Wednesday. Nicholas Okero is among the divers who have retrieved bodies from the river. He says the bodies are tied up tightly like a parcel in a sack. And since July, he said, we have got nobody from our area who has reported a missing person. Just the other day, he says, I retrieved the bodies of two Somali men again, and those people do not reside here. I don't know where they were killed. Okero said he identified the two bodies as Somali based on their physical features. Authorities have yet to determine the identities of any of the people found. In a statement, local police said the five bodies are among 19 discovered in the river over the last 2 years. Police say no one has come forward to claim the bodies. Salome Nduta is the director of Haki Africa, an organization working to promote human rights and justice in Kenya. Her organization visited River Yala and the Yala Hospital mortuary Monday.
When we got to Yala, we went straight to the morgue where we discovered 21 unknown bodies. Most of the bodies were tied up. Others were found in sacks, and others seemed to have deep cuts. And still we had some bodies which had polythene bags over their heads.
On Wednesday, after the discovery of the five bodies, dozens of family members of missing persons trooped to Yala in Siaya County. 59-year-old Ismail Okumu, a farmer from Mumias town in western Kenya, is one of them. He is looking for his brother, who was abducted by armed men 18 months ago. He says, I'm at a Yala mortuary searching for my brother's body. He was arrested on August 10, 2020, at 1 p.m. I have never found him, he says. Okumu adds, I have searched in all mortuaries, but I have never found him. Whenever I hear there are bodies found somewhere, I go there. Bodies have turned up in other Kenyan rivers under mysterious circumstances. Last September, 11 bodies were recovered in the Tana River in Garissa County. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
And still in East Africa, in Uganda, after nearly 2 years without classes, students in the country returned back to school earlier this month. Our reporter Mugume Davis Rwakarinji visited one of the schools and shares the excitement of students returning to class.
Students at Bunga Primary School in Kampala sing and dance upon their return at school.
Our timetable is going to be rather more fixed, rather busier than it was before. We are going to make sure that you get time for some free activity, you play a little. So we are going to have a program that will enable us to recover the lost time. Okay, boys and girls?
Yes.
Can you all hear me?
Yes.
I want to hear you respond with vigor. Everybody say yes.
Yes.
Daniel Oboth, Director of Studies, starts with psychosocial sessions as the students resume school. Oboth tells students they must cooperate with each other and administration for them to succeed after spending many days without school. He says discipline is a must. One of the students here is 13-year-old Nasaka Daphne Grace, who's in primary 7 class.
I feel happy that I'm back to school because the lockdown caused lots of setbacks, and I get to regain all the things that I forgot when I learnt. When the lockdown came. The subject that I think is going to give me the most trouble is math. Yeah, because I forgot most of the things in math, but the other subjects are okay.
Grace says she wants to become a lawyer. She says, unfortunately, some of her friends have gotten pregnant during the 2 years of lockdown and do not report back to school. At least 25% of teenagers become pregnant in Uganda, according to Uganda's Ministry of Health. While 15% of girls are married by the age of 15, according to Child Charity, UNICEF. Health experts and authorities have said the problem has even worsened because of the 2 years of lockdown imposed to curb rapid spread of COVID-19. Oboth is glad most students here have returned back with even bigger ambitions.
My name is Isaac Basharpak, and I'm in P4. I was feeling a bit hesitant to go to school, but now that I've been here a lot of days, I'm getting the hang of this place, and I really love it now. It's filled with all of my friends, and I'm really loving it here. I missed my friends. I missed playing outside at recess. I missed our break times. In the future, I want to become a doctor. because I feel like becoming one to help people in real trouble, you know?
My name is Ma Rebecca Elizabeth. I'm in primary 7, and I'm so happy that I'm back at school because, like, when the president closed schools, I was, like, sad. I cried that day because I was not happy. And now that I've reopened, I feel so much better after all this, that everything's now back to normal. I can complete my studies, and I get a better future.
My name is Kartik Singh, and I'm from Munyana's Peak Resort, and my class is P6 Apex. And after coming to school, I feel so great that I'm back to learn. That I feel so great. In future, I want to be a scientist.
Obo says that is why it is important to take these children through psychosocial counseling as they resume studies.
I have created a period during which girls sit with teachers and they are talked to about sexuality particularly, and also how they can generally protect themselves against bad people who could possibly rape them, defile them, just as you heard one of my people say. Though even the boys, we don't forget them.
For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Voice of America. Meanwhile, Algeria is closing its schools for 10 days after it registered a rise in Omicron cases. Algerian President Abdelmadjid Tebboune is encouraging citizens to get vaccinated as a way to counter the pandemic in the North African country. The government is also tightening entry requirements at airports. In Chad, the transitional government has released the first of some 250 members of armed groups it had promised to free from prison. This is under an amnesty aimed at fostering dialogue after the battlefield death of President Idriss Deby last April. Chad's Minister of Justice, Ahmad Mohamed Alhabo, led a short ceremony in Kelsoum Prison near the Captain N'Djamena, granting the immediate release of 22 detainees convicted of taking up arms against the country. The Democratic Republic of Congo is one step closer towards being admitted to the East African Community. This comes as the official start of negotiations was launched in Nairobi. Moses Havyarimana has more on this story.
In December last year, during the Heads of State Summit, the East African Community member states authorized the ministers to conduct another round of talks with the DRC on how it can be admitted to the bloc. 10 days of negotiations have now kicked off as the chair of the East African Community Council of Ministers, who is also Kenya's Cabinet Secretary of East African Community Affairs, Adan Mohamed, says that DRC's move to join the community is a step towards a united Africa.
And hopefully one day we would see real integrated continent of Africa with 54 member states, where its citizens are able to move freely without any restrictions, and we are able to trade with one another without much restriction. And I think with the Democratic Republic of Congo, given the proximity to the existing EAC members and many other factors, there are more things that we have in common than that are there to separate us.
The admission of the Democratic Republic of Congo in the East African Community is expected to boost the region's GDP to $240 billion from $193 billion. Peter Matuki is the Secretary General of the East African Community.
It is the stage, very important stage, of admitting DRC into the East African Community. This demonstrates commitment on the part of DRC to join the EAC.
DRC's Deputy Prime Minister and Minister for Foreign Affairs, Christophe Lutundula Apala, says that his country is looking forward to increase the trade and investment in the bloc.
Notre pays, la RDC, est parmi les pays
d'Afrique. He says his country is among African countries that included African Union in its constitution, where it gives its partial sovereignty for the unity of Africa. He says that his country is working tirelessly to join the community. The East African Community Legislative Assembly's lawmaker, Fred Mukasambide, says that DRC's move to join the community is paramount, but warns of existing challenges in the bloc.
We are still faced with the bilateral antipathy and antagonisms between certain countries, for example, Uganda and Rwanda, that is based on corrupt and mendacious security reports against Rwanda by Uganda. So all of these are going to be obviously blockade, facilities, bulwark against DRC's intent as they join the East African Community. These are things that need to be looked at.
All current East African Community member states except Kenya share a border with the DRC, making it a geographically strategic partner. When admitted, DRC will become the seventh and the largest member by area, as well as by population of an estimated 80 million people. Moses Aviarimana for Voice of America.
Nigerian football fans are cheering their team, the Super Eagles, at home and in Cameroon, which is hosting the Africa Football Cup of Nations tournament. Among the fans are hundreds of Nigerian refugees and people displaced by Boko Haram terrorism along the border with Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
Cameroon's state CRTV shows Nigerian football fans singing the Nigerian national anthem and cheering for its national football team, the Super Eagles, in northern Garoua City. Garoua is hosting the Africa Football Cup of Nations, or the AFCON, group matches for teams from Egypt, Guinea-Bissau, Nigeria and Sudan. The Confederation of African Football says thousands of Nigerian supporters have come to Garoua, but hundreds of them didn't have to travel far. 19-year-old Nigerian Mohammed Chiruma Faiza has lived in Cameroon's Minawawa refugee camp on the border with Nigeria for 6 years. She fled her village in Nigeria's northeast Borno State after Boko Haram militants attacked their school. Speaking on CRTV, she says authorities helped her and more than 20 other female team Nigeria supporters to watch the AFCON matches in Garoua.
I come to support Nigeria because it is my country. Anywhere I go, I can never forget my country. I can never forget Nigeria. I want Nigerian people to play very well and win this match.
The UN's refugee agency, UNHCR, says there are 68,000 Nigerian refugees in Cameroon's Minawawa camp. They elected Isaac Luca, who has lived in the camp since 2014, as their leader. Luca also fled Borno State in June 2014 after Boko Haram terrorists killed more than 20 people in his village, including his family. Speaking from Garoua, he says cheering on Nigeria's football team shows how much the refugees love their country and hope for peace so they can one day return home.
I take football as a way of resolving problems. If you look at the match Sudan and Nigeria, you know Nigeria is facing security challenges. Sudan is facing security challenges. If the two refugees can come together and watch their players on the field, it's something that can bring unity among the refugees.
Lucas says the refugees cheered the Nigerian team to a 1-0 victory over Egypt last week and a 3-1 victory over Sudan on Saturday. Nigeria plays their third group match against Guinea-Bissau Wednesday. The UN's refugee agency, UNHCR, says they helped at least 100 Nigerian refugees in Cameroon get to stadiums to watch AFCON matches. UNHCR in Cameroon spokesperson Xavier Bourgeois says they believe strongly in the power of sports.
People, and especially young people, also have the right to enjoy, like everybody else. And so when we have this kind of opportunities to bring the refugees in the stadium, of course, we do it with a lot of pleasure. Most of the refugees come from very difficult places. They suffered a lot. They have quite a difficult history. And so that was an opportunity for us to help them to rebuild themselves.
Cameroonian authorities say besides the refugees, several hundred Nigerians displaced by Boko Haram terrorists are also in Garoua to support the Nigerian football team. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaounde, Cameroon.
And that's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. For more African news and features, remember to visit our website at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good morning, Africa.